Oh, it's so lovely to see all of you. How many people here have no idea who the hell I am? You're in for a ride. For everybody else, thank you so much for attending and coming to my talk over other ones being done. I don't know why you turn away from being in a small box with Richard Stallman, but if it's your choice, I get it. Everyone's got personal choices. So there I was at the South California Climate Data Protection Project last January, 2017. That's a little event of climate people who were working together to try to save the objective observed data of actual real climate change in the United States and the entire country, and a concern that was valid and real, and which time has proven that much of that data is probably at risk and efforts will be made to remove it from public view. They brought me in to talk and give consultation and generally be a problem because I work for the Internet Archive, archive.org. And so the Internet Archive, which as it says is a nonprofit library of millions of free books, is also the home of the Wayback Machine, one of the jewels of the Internet, not a government institution, funded by donations and nonprofit grants, and provides a snapshot
history.
Why be a microphone? Why not something else? Microphone neutral. Anyway, so at the Internet Archive, we have this Wayback Machine, and it's really this beautiful thing. You type in a URL, and you get to what's there. And so one of the problems of saving web history is you have to save it when it happens. So you have to know something's important. So part of that is that the archive just randomly goes through billions of web pages. That screenshot says 305 billion, but that's a blatant lie. It's currently 479 billion. And so they're just constantly grabbing everything. And so I was brought in because we talk about, like, well, how can we save it for later and all those pieces, right? And I had this, while I was in there, I got this news. And the news was that my father's surgery hadn't gone so well. And he was having a heart valve fix-up in North Carolina. And it had come down to, he had He has three children. One of them was sick. One of them couldn't get out away from his job. And then there was me. So I offered to be the guy who would come down. So I flew basically from California right to my house in New York and flew immediately with no warning to spend a few days with my father. And the convalescence was extremely difficult because they had nicked some things inside and he was being treated. And you know, when you're taking care of a parent, it takes a lot out of you and you want to be there and you have to be there all the time, especially if you're worried about the production and amount of a hospital. And healthcare is difficult. It's a matter of, like, great highs, crushing lows, lots of profanity out of your family, and generally getting it due. But the archive is an extremely great place and has a... Oh, wonderful.
I am
delighted that the same consistent quality has greeted me lo these many years. All right, so the archive was extremely nice about this. I work remote, why not work from the hospital? So I'm down there taking care of my father and his various ailments and its ups and downs. And so, you know, like the archive, you have all these beautiful things like old 78 RPM records and old shareware CD-ROMs. You know, it's not just books. It's the ability to play old software and look at old software like that, or all sorts of crazy flyers and music pieces, and even, of course, these beautiful scanned materials. And because of the method we use, we scan about 1,000 books a day, and we scan them pretty nicely, so you get like a pretty good look. So there I am taking care of my dad, and it's supposed to be for a few days, but it turns into like a week and a half. And now I'm like, oh shit, I gotta take care of dad, but wait a minute, what about the manuals? So then we gotta get into the manuals. So I've done a number of projects over the years involving the real-time taking of things from real space to prevent their loss. These are technical reference manuals going back about 70 years for a wide variety of electronic testing equipment. They're beautiful. You either look at them and you say, well, of course, you have to save these, or why are you saving them? I'm in the, of course you save them. They're beautiful, they're evidence of things before, they come from a time of technical writing we probably won't see again. And so at the time, they told me, when I had gone there a year previously, that, yeah, they're gonna throw them out in 3 days. And we were able to get a wide variety of people to show up with 2 days' notice and go through and box them, find all the unique ones, sort them all through until we had taken all of the unique ones and ended up with 1,600 banker boxes. And we stored them in a storage unit nearby, and it was, I had arranged for a truck to come take them to the Internet Archive. But I wasn't in Maryland. I was in North Carolina taking care of my dad. There's multiple things you could do in this situation to get things right. I decided, okay, I'll get into my car and drive 5 hours up there and then arrange for them to be forklifted in. Here's what the manuals look like when they're getting ready to go to the archive. And here's me, don't do this, that moves. So we forklifted these little suckers away and we were able to do it. And then I drove right back from Maryland, right back to North Carolina, basically later that day, 10 hours driving to be able to be back with my dad. And again, taking care of him, getting him to walk and doing everything else. And I want to stress right now that he was taken care of beautifully. They gave him the things he needs. He is healed wonderfully. My father is absolutely fine. So on the last day I was there, though, I had run into another problem, which was, oh, shit, I'm going to Australia on Saturday, and it's Friday, and I haven't booked a flight, and I'm sick. Like, I'm feeling sick. I've got, like, the flu or something. I don't feel well. So what does Jason do? Jason goes back to the hotel room. Jason gets all of the linens that are in the room, stacks them all up on a bed. Jason gets into the pile of linens and items on one bed, turns off all the lights, drinks half a bottle of NyQuil, turns on endless Bill Burr comedy routines, and goes to sleep for 6 hours to sweat it out. I recover feeling good and take a plane that I was able to book, land in New York, and 1 hour and a half later, am on a flight to Australia. So I'm going to get to go to Australia. All right. Stop off in Dubai with the ridiculous McDonald's Arabic, which still looks weird to me. And then Haagen-Dazs, even more weird. You all know that, like, Haagen-Dazs is a totally made-up word, right? It was created in New Jersey to sound Danish. All right, so I go to Melbourne. Everything's awesome. I've got two wonderful things I'm going to do. I am going to speak at an event about copyright, and I'm going to host something called White Night Arcade Fun, where I'm going to host a night of arcade playing for 4 or 5 hours. Both these organizations have brought me in, Acme and Museum Next. All right? And then I had a heart attack. An actual heart attack. It had blocked part of my heart. So that line on the left is supposed to be a lot longer than it is. So something's in there killing me. They told me later I would either have died instantly or not, but almost. But anyway, so Melbourne's a lot of fun because, you see, I don't know I had a heart attack. So I'm going around to this place and I'm looking at all the emit you have to see, by the way. The graffiti of Melbourne is a wonder of the world, right? And I'm working on my talk and I've got a really cool rental place right near the talks. And I walked 16,646 steps. I am an overachiever, as was already indicated. My talk was called Mad Facts Among Copyright Fury Road. It was basically a warning to Australians that if they adopt the American regime, it will be a wasteland of misery and sadness. And it was to a collection of librarians, and so they were not expecting me to do the same thing on stage when I gave my speech. So people know the trick of like what this particular, people know what this is, right? That this is actually like silver cake mix. So I got silver cake mix and sprayed this shit. It turns out silver cake mix has a very distinct smell, which the first four rows of this place apparently smelled like a cake for the rest of the thing. And I pointed out these kind of things, that there's going to be no copyrighted works reverting to the public domain in America from 1999 to 2018. I said, if your job is to give a list to your institution of all the new copyright works that are falling out, take that job. Because every January you can go, none. I want to point out again, I'm having a heart attack. I'm having a heart attack on stage. I then hosted this event. And this event was basically a thing, I don't know if people know of this, there's this beautiful thing created by Bennett Foddy, who makes that other fucking game that I hate, frustrating the fuck out of yourself with Bennett Foddy. And he created this arcade thing, which allows you to play remixed MAME versions, and you compete with people. You get 15 seconds to like play this game, 15. And I was up there, and I asked for a stool, because I wasn't feeling well. So I am up there doing a presentation for 4 hours and annoyed at how tired I am. So I'm drinking Red Bulls to fix that. So I did that, right? And they gave me the things. And the next thing, I had this lovely dinner at the top of one of the finest restaurants in Australia with a lovely lady. We had, you know, as you can see from the two pieces of wood, it's great food. This would have been a fine last dinner. So again, visiting Melbourne, had a lovely time, and you know, again, at some point, I stumble and hit the sidewalk. I remember this. And people helped me up, and I was like, what the fuck is wrong with me? I am so tired these days. I must be getting old. So here's how your life is saved. You don't get to sleep after a week of having your heart attack, but you don't know that. You walk 2 miles to a clinic. You go to the clinic and the guy says, like, here's some Maalox, because a lot of guys, you know, whatever you've got, it's either hard or not, and here's some Maalox, try it. Nope, doesn't work. Okay, I know a cardiologist buddy. So I go to the cardiologist buddy, and his name is Dr. George Lytle, and he measured me for 20 seconds, and everything else was millions of dollars equipment verifying what he had heard. And he's like, yeah, you can't get on a plane in the next day or two. I have to figure out how to sneak an American into this hospital. So he personally drove me into the hospital and right up into the cardiac unit and put me in the waiting line and left a note and got out of there so he wouldn't get in trouble. And what I remember was I'm sitting there and the doctors came in and looked at me and said, okay, hey, you know, Dr. George Lytle, I heard he dropped you off. Dr. George dropped you off. Let's do some research, and you know, maybe tomorrow we might have to do a procedure. And I was like, oh, so like the note says. And he was like, what note? I said, oh, we left the note out front. And he goes out the note, he comes back, he goes, all right, so we're going to operate in 20 minutes. Now I have a problem. He's using phrases I don't like. Phrases like low chances of paralysis. High, start out positive, high survivability rate. And I realize that there's a little shake of the dice that I'm about to die. That they're not gonna, whatever the fuck this is not gonna be great. So, two things. First of all, I had called my office to let them know, hey, I'm having a heart attack. It was like midnight there. And Brewster insisted I take the company credit card and charge it wherever I needed, however I needed. So that was handled. And this is my last tweet. This turns out to be what I thought should be my last tweet, which was very special to me, that I was actually able to have the, you know, now, none of my followers are happy about this. What the fuck is this? Jason is nice. wow, what's happening? Where's Melbourne, Victoria? So I said two things to my companion, which I thought were important. One was, you were the best of everything. It's not very easy to say goodbye to someone like that. And also, you did nothing wrong. Because one thing I've encountered with people who are survivors is they think that like there was like one phrase, one move. You know, I spoke about suicide 2 years ago, and people could, the opposite side of what I talked about, which was listening, is to not blame yourself, to act like, oh, if I had only blank, 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 this would be different, and it's on me. It's my fault. It's not true. I didn't feel well. We went to the doctor. I'd had a heart attack for 7 days. And I survived, I think. This is Dr. Sonny Palmer. He was the man who went through my heart and opened it and fixed it while I was awake. It's a procedure. They made a hole in my wrist and came in through there and knocked out the happy Colette, the many fine tuna melts. And Sonny Palmer, in Australia, in Melbourne, they really love, they love 80s pop music. So there were like 9 people in that room operating on me. There's a television with me watching my heartbeat, and they're playing John Bon Jovi's You Give Love a Bad Name. Shot through the heart, and you're to blame. So they asked me if I'd voted for Trump. I asked them if that affected the outcome of the operation. I gave my own clammed up political theory while they went through me. At one point he said, I really need you to stand still for this part. And I'm like, Roger. So he fixed my heart. So left, right. Turned out I needed all that. So again, it's a weird picture, but you can see up there, there's the chunk, and then they take the chunk out and all that starts working again. And I feel immediately better. Within a day, I'm fucking around. They kept me in there for 3 days, and I will make a little mention about this. So here's the thing that happened that I love. Okay, so their money people came by, because I'm a foreigner in their hospital, and I'm like, bring it! How much did I just rack up? And I'll always remember this woman's look on my face, and she was like, well... And, you know, because they don't want to shock the patient. And she was like, this could be in the realm of $10,000. And I was like, I could walk into an emergency room and borrow a fucking Q-tip in America, and that would be $10,000. So it was great. And what's most fascinating to me under this kind of healthcare system is how money is just not in the equation anywhere at all. And the way I've tried to describe it is, imagine if you went to a restaurant, and at this restaurant, there were some waiters, and you're like, dude, this food is amazing. This is really great. But I got this thing. Like in 2 or 3 hours, I'm gonna need to use a bathroom. You have any recommendations? Well, how would you answer? I mean, I did pay, so I did pay for it, but I mean, he's like, well, we have a bathroom, but you don't want to stick around here for 3 hours. And I mean, most train stations, a restaurant, you could go to a store, right? Hey, Steve, right, store? You go to a store. Like that feeling of like, I'm answering the question and it has answers, that was how they were. I'd be like, so how much is this costing? They're like, I've never seen a bill. One thing that fascinated me was at one point I said, yeah, this can't be worse than treating a gunshot. And he's like, I've never operated on a gunshot. And I'm like, what? Has anyone here operated on a gunshot? Nobody. I just kept asking this. I'm like, have you ever operated on a gunshot victim? Nope. 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 Okay. Now, I will actually say that what I did discover later is that they actually deal with a lot of, like, dude drinks way too much at 2 p.m. and hits a curb. So they do have trauma, just a different kind of trauma. So now what? Right? My life is different. And I will say right now, so you're not worried, I am 100% recovered. I went to, I have a doctor at Mount Sinai who checks on me every 3 months. He says I'm as good as can possibly be. I've got no lingering damage. I'm not in any way, I'm better than I was. I take 6 different medications for various aspects of this. I have a stent right here, a little tiny metal thing that just says no and just lets it stay open. My final bill, by the way, was $16,000, of which 6 was the stent. So the rest of it was 9 medical professionals, operation, and the thing. So that was an easy pay. I ended up paying back my work for the thing, you know. So and thanks to the podcast, which some of you listen to, I don't owe any money from that. So I don't have any medical weight on my heart, and I am fine. I have lost 25 pounds. I walk 5 miles a day. I feel better than most. So I'm in great shape, okay? But this was a thing that changed me. I didn't expect to die at 47 years old. So, you know, suddenly I was out. So everything's a bonus. Everything's wonderful. So the first question you have to ask is, do I keep doing what I'm doing? I mean, certainly the whole thing about tuna melts, yeah, that's over. And I've only had meat a half dozen times in the 2 years since. And I eat a lot of vegetables. And all the vegetables. Here's the great thing. Yeah, let's give it up for vegetables. That was great because that was like giving them all an audition again. Like, hey, Kale, someone tried to give this to me along with some political bullshit while I was trying to sleep with them in college about 25 years ago. And it didn't work out, but come on into the office again. Let's talk. That's how avocados came back into my life. That's how apples, grapes, a lot of lettuce, a lot of different, they all came back. So I've had some delicious stuff. And that beautiful person who was in that restaurant photo and I cook beautiful meals together and are close as we've ever been because we get to make meals together. So you know, the food, I didn't just go a lot. See, but the other way you could go is, fuck it, doomed, and just end it. And it does have that. People do that. But what I decided was archive.org was really important work. And I was right where I wanted to be. That was very important to me. Like, I loved the fact that my first thought was, yeah, I was doing just what I wanted to do. The archive, this is the inside of the Internet Archive. Those are servers in the alcoves. People are always, there's emotional reaction when they see that. And then there's more emotional reaction when they go like, what's up with the little fucking statues? If you work at the archive for 3 years, we give you a little statue because we don't have stock options. So that's what you get. And so, you know, my little buddies, they all work there, right? The archive is where I want to be. I also work for something called Archive Team, which is an archivist group that goes in and saves things. So that recent HHS bullshit, or where 500px announced they were closing down, or going back a bunch of years when GeoCities was going down. This is a group of amateurs who go in and we download as much of everything as we can before it gets deleted because you can't get it back once it's gone. I'm still, you know, a mascot for that group. And you're able to help us by using something called the Archive Team Warrior, that's a virtual machine that sits on your box and helps us create a low-orbiting ion cannon that attacks a site and pulls everything down. I call it a distributed preservation of service attack. People draw lots of cool things to indicate what's going on. I don't know who did that. I also decided to keep up with Sockington, which is my Twitter account that is a cat with over 1 million followers.
that's going to, like, now you're fucked in the head. Because you're like, really? Is that a thing you just said? Yeah. My cat has 1 million followers on Twitter. So whenever I see some sort of brand management asshole talking about, oh, we're going to follow, I'm like, yeah, that's nice. It's less than my cat, but sure, that's... And again, you'll notice that his tweets are as deep as they go, right? You are my favorite mouse. Correction, favorite remaining mouse. Is it everyone okay? Meow for help. So yeah, let's keep that fun up, right? So I've been perennially an unpleasant person. And so I would say that I'm less pleasant in some ways, but I care about other things, and I've tried to push the caring more than the punishment. I have let some people sleep where previously they would have a fitful tossing night. Not every time, but often. And I still believe very strongly in things. And I still fight for things that I believe in. So that's still there, but making everything into a personal grinding hatred is off the table for me. And I've tried to focus on the positive, right? I mean, people can get you. And you all, I mean, most of you realize, right, that most of the mechanisms now in place for most of the social media platforms are designed to cause engagement, and algorithmically, engagement turns out to be greatest when you make everybody hate each other. And so there's a line about the Petaluma chickens. Most of the chickens in America are called Petaluma super chickens. It's a certain breed of chicken that can grow to adult size in about 6 weeks. It's delicious. So the thing is when they were being bred, they started to breed for fast-growing chickens. And then they discovered that when the chickens became adults, they attack each other brutally to the point that in some places they just literally de-beak the chickens so that they can't destroy each other. Because they thought they were breeding faster-growing chickens, but they were breeding meaner chickens. Similarly, there are a variety of mechanisms out there that are supposed to cause engagement and are just causing rage. And once you discovered that, I'm able to focus on, hopefully, making the world better. I'm somewhat known for the fact that I have something called the Information Cube. And the Information Cube is a shipping container in my backyard. And this had all sorts of neat shit in it. So this is what happens when you say yes for 15 years. I have a bunch of old stuff, Jason. Would you like it? Yes. I have a bunch of old computers. Sure. This is going away. I'll take it. What about this stuff? Why not? You'll end up with 40 by 8 by 8 of computer history. And it doesn't always look this clean. So 4 months after my heart attack, I proceeded to pull it apart. And what I started to do was talk to institutions, because I realized if I had died and my 4 or 5 closest friends, tears in their eyes, walked into this horse shit, whatever love I had built up over my life would burn like a wax candle in a furnace. And they'd be like, that motherfucker saved phone bills from when he was 20. And he mixed them in with a one-of-a-kind Sun prototype. This is kind of neat. The 400th version of it isn't as neat. Why? Why, Jason, why? So I started to go talk to institutions, the Strong Museum of Play, the Living Computer Museum, the Vintage Computer Foundation, who has a booth down here. And I would say, will you take all of the monitors? So they took all the monitors. One group took all of the vintage computing equipment. And the Internet Archive started to take stuff that I promised myself one day I would send them. And I said, today's the day I'm going to send them. These are the magazines I had, and they're now at the Vintage Computer Federation. So, you know, these are thousands and thousands of computer magazines that they're now holding in their 501 nonprofit organization that will make it available to others. Here's one of the shipments. I had a FedEx person say, could you stop doing this? Now, she said it like, I mean, like that, like, could you stop doing this? And I went, no. But I did get a pie and bring it. I hope that would help, but I don't know. So I pulled this thing apart. And so much of the narrative of the collectors that I take it from is they just want to know it didn't go into a dumpster. And nothing really went into a dumpster unless it was broken, moldy, or dead. And most of it went to facilities that should have gotten them a long time ago, right? And good fucking bye. So I did keep some things. Like, here are some mixed items that have gone into storage. There's a few boxes of these. So I would say I have gotten rid of 90% of my possessions. And I'm now working to get rid of 90% of the remaining possessions. Because most of it was me. Once I looked it up my life hard, I said, most of what I'm holding is in trust for a visualized future. So I should pass that on to groups whose job is to hold things in trust. I shouldn't be that person. So here are the manuals, unpacked, reboxed, and put on pallets at the Internet Archive's storage, which I don't have any direct control over unless I wish to interact with them. Here are books from that collection. That box is one of 30 of those boxes of software at the Internet Archive. Now, that's a lot, but it's not in control of me. If I go again, this is someone's responsibility, but it's a segmented, homogeneous collection. They can say, yes, we want this, no, transfer it here, do the, you know, in other words, it's now not, what do we even have here? Oh, Jesus Christ, it's a donut, right? Holy crap, there's underwear in here. So that was very important to me in unpacking that emotionally. So the archive has a lot of space, physical too. There are millions of books here. This is when we scan them, we put them in there. So my stuff is inside that little open piece there, and it is safe and it is happy. I was reminded of how things can go the other way with this guy, whose name I've now forgotten. He probably wouldn't want me to tell you his name. So if you look, these are two pictures. These are CD-ROMs. They are grabs of every movie, music, and other items off of Usenet for the course of about 5 years. And the reason it says free is because he died. And they moved his stuff to the basement. And said, and one guy, because now I'm known for this, went, surely Jason Scott wants this. Not knowing that he's got fresh, new, shiny Jason Scott is magic Jason Scott. But okay. And I said, yes, of course I'll take it. But I took it within the context of, and by the way, and this is what kills me, is if you look, you see that writing. So on Windows, there's something called the G-Spot codec analyzer. And what it is you run it, and it tells you like what the resolution, the codec, all these datum about a file. And he carefully wrote the title and what the G-Spot codec output was on each CD, all 7,000 for years, to the end of a pile of nothing. So I took all of his stuff and I read it because I have automatic CD readers. I didn't write what was on the outside because the content is inherent in the item. Like the amount of metadata he added was zero. So I immediately did that and I processed all 7,000. And then I gave them to a young kid in Santa Cruz who has broken them up and turned them into art so that it's something positive somewhere. And I think he'll name it after him. So, you know, it has been very, very educational for me to have this happen. I'd prefer not this thing happening again, and I am working very hard not to let it happen again. Yay for giving a shit. I think one of the things that kind of comes out from people is when they, you know, like I said, everybody has their own specific journey as to how they feel about their disease and their stuff, right? And I wrote a blog entry, because you still do that sometimes, called The Other Half. And it's the other half of my life, which begins now, right? I moved out of my brother's house where I had a single room that was full of lots of computer equipment. I moved into a beautiful apartment with this person who I love. And I made sure, and she's made sure, that this isn't happening again. Not in that, oh, my nagging partner, but the objective realization of it is a shitty way to live. Let's not live shitty, which has been my theme. Let's not live shitty. Let's be good. Let's not live shitty. Let's take care of things. Let's matter, because we're only here for a short time. And this came with no warning for me. I mean, granted, it's, you know, double-decker, I should have been like, this is a warning. But this is a delicious warning. But I didn't. I didn't know that this was going to happen so early. And it did, and I you know. I've always cared about computer history, about the stories of people behind them. I've done a number of documentaries. Of those documentaries, there's been so many people who have been lost from them now, you know, a dozen plus people, and I have full recordings of them, and I put it up on the archive. This slight bummer of finiteness to me can be a learning experience and focus. Now, the other side of it is it's like I'm super high all the time. And so for like my coworkers for a while, I'm sure it was incredibly frustrating where they'd be like, this isn't working. And I'm like, isn't it amazing we live in a universe where things don't work? So like what's happening right now, this little controversy on the Twitters, on a platform designed to cause controversy, that the Hope Conference is not handling things right, or that this should be that or that, I'm looking at it as like, oh, people are disagreeing. Wow. Isn't it neat how we disagree? So again, take that with a grain of Jesus Christ, what's with this fucking guy? Don't worry, I don't go to church and I don't wear anything. But there's a, I have this strong belief that like in the realm of things, people have been really amazing. People, I started a podcast called Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It, which was meant to raise money to kind of pay off some old debts I have. And it has been fantastic on two levels. I've done 33 episodes, each of them about a half an hour, and they talk like this. And I have been digging deeper and deeper with every episode. The initial ones were hilarious stories of meeting old people and doing weird shit, and some of them were about the technology. And then over time, they're becoming about like, well, people call me an amateur, and what's an amateur, and what does it mean to have mystery, and where have I been alone, and where have I built rage, and everything else. So it's been wonderful to kind of do that kind of self-reflection. So that's kind of where I am right now, right? I'm happy. Here I'm in Iceland. I'm living well. And so if anything comes of this talk, please, if anything is entertaining or whatever, please enjoy the moments you have, because it comes and it changes so quickly. I'm dedicating this talk to my friend Dan Seldo, who tweeted to me this. The fucking day on February. And in April, you see me say, thanks, pal. Sorry we didn't get a chance. Because a month or so later, he laid down waiting for dinner on a Sunday, and he didn't wake up. No warning. He just died. And we have dedicated a grove to him in California, and we miss him every day. And he thought he was fucking with me. And God, that shit, fucked with all of us. So this is, please don't, don't walk away from moments because some of it didn't go well. Not only is perfect the enemy of good, seeking perfection in your life is the enemy of living. So please do that. I'm not taking questions.